May proceed.
Good morning, Mr. and Ms. Justices. I thank you for this opportunity. May it please the court. You know, I represent Alberto Mejia. I believe that some of the issues have been fairly definitively addressed in the brief, and I'll try not to be too redundant. I do want to bring the court's attention to a couple of things, and I believe that the Centurion case reflects a point that this court has often, and the appeals court has often raised, and that is that the court is going to protect its integrity and attempt to avoid miscarriage of justice. That's a common underlying theme of what the court at the appeals level is here for. One of the problems that has occurred here is that it seems that the jury has been allowed to step outside of its bounds, disregard the law and the facts of the case. That was permitted by the trial court, as you know, by refusing to overrule, by refusing to grant a new trial, premising that on the fact that the admissions the defendant made of a debt to the plaintiff were extrajudicial. The appeals court at least got that right. In court, the defendant stated no less than four times that he owed money to the plaintiff. The jury disregarded it. The trial court disregarded it and said it's okay. The appeals court at least came to the conclusion that those were, in fact, judicial admissions. This court has repeatedly addressed the issue of judicial admissions and says they can't be ignored. They have to be taken into consideration, and that was not done by the jury below.
What were the issues that affect that the jury was to decide in this case?
The two primary, I guess, capsulized issues were, first of all, whether or not Mr. Chapman was indebted for unpaid wages to the plaintiff, Mr. Mejia. The second
That presumes that he's an employee.
It presumes that he worked for Mr. Chapman for some promised compensation that he did not get. And I say that because you use the term employee. The second issue is whether or not
You don't pay wages to an independent contractor.
Well, in this case, they had an agreement for an hourly wage.
Okay.
And I would agree with you, Mr. Mejia was not an independent contractor, but the jury found otherwise. I think the evidence is so staggered against that, it's incomprehensible. But nonetheless, they did.
Okay, what was the other issue?
The other issue was whether he was an employee or an independent contractor. So the issues were, did he earn money he was not paid, and was he an employee or an independent contractor?
Getting back to the admission, is the admission significant to show damages, or is it significant to show that there was a contract and a breach of contract? What is the admission?
Both. There was a breach of contract. The contract was, you work, I'll pay. He did not pay. There was a breach of contract. The amount of damages was admitted by Mr. Chapman repeatedly during the trial. Well, let me qualify that. He admitted there was a certain amount of unpaid wages. That is not the amount that Mr. Mejia agreed to. He believed that the unpaid wages were substantially more. But the fact is, the jury was informed that Mr. Chapman did, in fact, owe wages. It came back with a verdict saying, we find for the defendant. Therefore,
let me ask you about the instructions that the trial court gave to the jury, which were rather lengthy. They incorporated a conventional NJI instruction on plaintiff's burden on how to establish a contract and what the terms are and whether or not there's a breach and proving damages and so forth, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, how do you reconcile that with the statements in the pretrial order where you all agreed that there was a contract and so forth? So why was the jury asked to do things that had already been agreed as undisputed in the pretrial order? Why was this submitted to the jury?
Well, if there was a problem on my part, it was not objecting to the court giving the jury a verdict form to find for the defendant. That would have been in my mind the sole thing that should not have been done.
Are you saying that before the trial it was undisputed that your client was an employee and that he was owed a certain amount of wages?
No, I don't think it was undisputed before the trial.
Well,
I think the fact that he was an employee or a worker who was hired to do work was probably not disputed. The issue was
the
whether or not there
order
was any
showed,
money.
If the pretrial shows as undisputed that there was a contract, why would you give that issue to the jury, which
sure
in turn would permit them to come back and say there just is no deal?
I don't know that they had the issue of whether there was a contract. I guess if that's in the instructions, I don't remember it. What I do remember is the instructions indicated that there was an admission by Mr. Chapman, that is in the instructions, that he owed money.
What's the significance of Chapman's tender of that amount and refusal by your client prior to trial?
An attempt at offer and compromise. It was not accepted because it was not acceptable to Mr. Mejia.
Was it an offer of compromise according to the statute?
No, it wasn't done in that framework. It was just an offer
it
that
just
Mr.
Happened
Chapman
in, it just happened in
made.
Life, but it wasn't a pleading and so forth according
no.
to the statutory framework of an offer.
No, it was not done that way.
All right.
It
and
was
does
just
the record
something...
show that with respect to Mr. Chapman's bookkeeping that it was undisciplined until the existence of a lawsuit, so to speak? There were no FICA and futures
that was
tendered prior to the lawsuit or developed prior to the lawsuit.
That is correct.
So the numbers that Mr. Chapman is putting forward are developed after the events.
Correct.
And the jury could or could not credit those, is that correct?
They were allowed to have those over objection. That leaves me 3 minutes and I'd be happy to respond to any additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bauman, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, please, the court. My name is Larry Bowman. I'm an attorney from Kelly Spitzmeyer Law Firm in North Platte, Nebraska. We represent Randy Chapman. Mr. Chapman is simply a small business guy in Lexington, Nebraska, has a small construction business. In fact, there's only two people primarily that are all working in this job. That is Brian Rosacker and Mr. Chapman. When it came to Mr. Mejia, he was simply advised that if he wanted to get some money, you could come over and do some work. What he did is he came when he wanted to, left when he wanted to, quite frankly.
Was there anything understood as to what he would be paid and what he was to do?
Yes. They talked about he would be paid at the beginning $10 an hour.
Is that a contract?
I believe an oral contract,
okay.
Yes.
What was his status? Was he an independent contractor?
Absolutely.
Was he paid in cash or by check?
At the beginning, he was paid in check. He was asked, Mr. Mejia asked to be paid in cash, and then later, in fact, asked to not be paid on a regular basis, but that Mr. Chapman hold his money until such time as he asked for it. Which is what probably led to this problem, because he would periodically just come in and say, you know, I'd like paid today. Mr. Chapman would go, come back with
so
check.
So the thing boils down,
cash,
to,
I'm sorry.
It boils down to whether or not there was simply a dispute as to what was owed, if anything, from
that's
the,
probably pretty much what it was, yes.
What was the jury asked to decide?
The jury was asked to decide, because ultimately the case was, is there any money owed to Mr. Mejia?
Ultimately, that might have been suitable to say to the jury, how much money, if any, is owed, but that's not how they were instructed.
No, they were...
They were instructed, were they not, under the NJI second, under contract. Plaintiff has the burden to show there's a contract, what the terms are, was there a breach, has plaintiff established damages, and on and on. And then it goes on to talk about a whole bunch more stuff. And then they came back with some questions because they were thoroughly confused, evidently.
Yeah, I don't know whether I would say they were confused, but...
Well, in any event, they came back with some questions.
Yes, they did. And the question basically was two questions. If we fine for the defendant, do we still have to fine for $1,452, which is the amount that he had offered? And the other one was, do we have to fine for the plaintiff to award the $1,452?
Well, it was more than an offer. It was actual tender, wasn't it?
Yes.
Now, what significance does that have as when a tender of payment that's admittedly owed is made and refused, what impact does that have in subsequent litigation?
I think, quite frankly, what that amounts to is, and look at the picture of this, Mr. Mejia is saying, I'm entitled to, as I recall, $258,000. When you look at the final group of what am I entitled to, he got an $1,800 check. He said, I don't think that's enough. Mr. Chapman went back, said, okay, you know, I think maybe it's $1,200. He said, no, so I'm going to sue you. At which point, you know, he says, well, here, we'll tender to you $1,452, which basically shows to me that there's a real question open as to whether there's any money owed at all and how much, if he is. And in this case, Mr. Chapman is saying, okay, you know, I'll give you this. Mr. Mejia is saying, no, that's not it. And I think that that brings you to the evidence that was presented, ultimately the decision by the jury, which is all he is doing is saying, my opinion. Mr. Chapman is saying, my opinion is that I think maybe I owe him $1,452. Remember that we had had a three-day trial as to whether there was any evidence that he's entitled to anything. And one of the overriding things of this case is Mr. Mejia had absolutely no evidence as to, frankly, how long he had worked. And, in fact,
$250,000 at $10 an hour is a huge amount of hours put in on a job, isn't it?
Absolutely. And his testimony was that he thought...
2,500 hours.
His testimony was that he worked 52 weeks out of every year, 8 hours every day during those 52 weeks, and that he had done that without fail. And the evidence that we presented showed, first off, Brian Rosacker and Mr. Chapman testified, no, he was not there ever that long. And we also had people whose jobs they were on said that they went to the job site and Mr. Mejia was not there. So there was a real dispute as to whether how many hours he had frankly worked. And I think that's, he had no evidence to speak of, and it kept nothing on that. And that's why you get into this.
What was Mejia doing on these jobs? What was his particular job?
In most cases, what he did is he came over and might have done roofing, because the testimony was he was not a guy that did, what they did is they build or remodel houses, small contractor. And so he never worked interior, never did the final work, never did any stuff like that. What he would do is one of those, look, if you want to come over, we're roofing. You know, if you want to climb on the roof and put on shingles, you can do that. That was basically what he did. I think there was some testimony that occasionally, when they were doing framing, you know, a lot of times you apparently, I'm not a big contractor, but apparently you need one more set of hands to hold up the frame.
There was, in the payments that were made, there were no deductions for Social Security or other taxes or wages that normally you would do if you were working as an employee, and the employer would be obligated to make these reports and returns.
Yeah, there were no withholdings.
So the paperwork, is that correct, was developed after the lawsuit?
The paperwork you're talking about are the 1099s. Yeah. And, yes, 1099. That was done later.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, we told him that, you know, you have an obligation to do it this way. But that's, you know, the other paperwork, I mean, he had notebooks, that sort of thing, that he did during the course of jobs. But the 1099s absolutely were done after the fact to support folks supposed to be done. So, from our perspective, he was an independent contractor. As he came and went and did anything that he wanted, he was on the phone most of the time when he was there. We also think that relative to the $1,452, that's money that, you know, there was an opinion between two different people as to what was owed. That was what Mr. Chapman thought. I don't think that's an admission. I think it's his saying, well, this is kind of where I'm at, and the jury can make a decision what they want to do. And that's what they did. They listened to the evidence. So we would request that you simply uphold the lower court's decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 2 minutes and 30 seconds, Mr. Brower.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address a couple of things that you were told that simply do not bear reference or any recognition in the facts. Mr. Chapman did not offer an opinion, maybe I owe money. He stated unequivocally, I owe Mr. Mejia $1,452.
Okay, but you would agree that that's a huge difference between $250,000.
First of all, $250,000 is at least double what Mr. Mejia was originally asking. Mr. Mejia claimed that he worked there for about 7 years all the time. He went from $10 an hour to $12 an hour about 3 or 4 years.
So this is over a 7 year period.
Yes. And he did ask Mr. Chapman to pay him by cash. Mr. Chapman was all over the board during trial. First, he said, I paid him every month, everything he was due that month. Then he testified, no, I paid him when he wanted me to pay him. Then he testified, well, he came to me once and wanted some of the money I owed him, and I gave him $5,600 so he could go buy a truck. So Mr. Chapman is all over the landscape when it comes to what he did, what the agreement was, and how the payments were made. We know they were made in cash. We know that Mr. Chapman kept no records of what he paid. We know that he made no claim for those payments on his taxes. He did not deduct anything he paid when he paid his own income taxes. So in essence, he was paying income tax against money that he had actually paid somebody else.
Did Mejia have records of the time that he spent working on the projects?
Mejia only kept records of what he received in cash payments on a calendar that he kept.
But he doesn't have any records of the work he performed for which he was not paid.
He did not keep time records. That's correct.
So what ultimately do you want this court to do? Order that your client get $1,400? Or?
No, I don't believe that's this court's option. I believe this court has to look back and say, was that trial conducted properly? Did the jury return a verdict based on the evidence? They did not, and I think this court should reverse it, send it back for a new trial on all issues. That's what I believe the court should do.
What are the issues you think should be submitted to the jury?
The issues that should be submitted are, what was Mr. Mejia actually owed, and was he an independent contractor or an employee? Those are the two issues.
Should the jury be asked, is there a contract?
I don't think so. Mr. Chapman has acknowledged that he employed him to work for him.
Should the jury be asked, is there a breach?
They didn't have to be asked because Mr. Chapman admitted he did not pay what he agreed to pay.
And in this case, under the instructions as given, the jury was asked to determine those things.
The jury was instructed that Mr. Chapman admitted owing $1,452, but that was not the total.
I'm sorry. In the jury instructions, the court instructed the jury that the plaintiff had the burden to establish that the existence of a contract and its terms and whether or not there was a breach. Is that correct?
That's probably correct, and okay. I'll have to be honest, I do not remember all the details.
Okay. And the parties submitted that instruction to the court.
That's correct. And the jury
said... And therefore, the jury understood these were the tasks it should assume.
The jury asked, if we find for the plaintiff, does Mr. Chapman have to pay him the $1,452? And if we find for the defendant, does he have to pay the $1,452? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is State versus Tyler C. Bain. Mr. Davis, good morning. Let's give everybody a moment to get in and out of the courtroom.